Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. George W. Bush had his, what is advertised, what's billed as his last press conference this morning. A few interesting moments worth noting. We'll get into those in about 15 minutes here. But I would say broadly, nothing of any great consequence. No surprises. Let's put it that way. Which I suppose is how it should be on the way out. Maybe we could breathe a sigh of relief. But there are a lot of issues that are going to be on Barack Obama's plate that, frankly, have been on the American people's mind for a long, long time. And I'd say right up at the top of them, we have a broad coalition of businesses in the United States who are saying we would like to be competitive with Canada, with Western Europe, with Japan, with Korea, with other countries around the world that have universal health care. And, of course, a broad coalition of people in the United States who want national health care of some form. Robert Moffitt is with us. He is the director for the Center for Health Policy Studies at the Heritage Foundation. Prior to that, a veteran of Washington policymaking for 25 years, former senior official at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services in the Office of Personnel Management during the Reagan administration. He specializes in Medicare reform, health insurance, and other health policy issues. Robert Moffitt, Bob Moffitt, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Tom. How are
you? I am well, thank you. And I should note, the website for the Heritage Foundation is heritage.org. I've done a couple of debates over there at the Heritage Foundation. I always found it an amicable place. Bob, why shouldn't we drive a stake through the heart of William McGuire's company, United Healthcare? Here's the second largest health insurance company in the United States, and they paid their CEO, according to a front-page story in last year's Wall Street Journal, $1.78 billion. And where did they get that money? From denying health care to Americans. Why shouldn't we just kill off companies like this?
Well, I think, frankly, you got a great point. I think that we ought to have the authority to kill off companies like that. The problem is that we actually don't control the money. The money is controlled by employers. It's controlled by government officials, controlled by managed care executives like McGuire. So what I would do is I would have a revolution in financing. I would say, in effect, that we would have a situation where the $2.3 trillion that we spend in healthcare, in terms of the financing of it, that the control of the dollars would be shifted both, to individuals and families to pick the healthcare plan that they want, the choices they want to make. And if they're dissatisfied with McGuire or they're dissatisfied with anybody else, they should be able to do with health insurance what they do with life insurance and auto insurance and homeowners insurance and just simply fire him.
Well, auto insurance is probably the outlier there because it's mandated. It's required.
Yeah, it's mandated, but still you can buy. I agree, but you can buy.
But it is a relatively competitive market in some places. But in Vermont, for example, where I lived for 10 years, you moved to Vermont. I moved to Vermont, and the first thing that one of the largest national insurance car insurance companies did, and when I moved to Vermont, I was in my 40s, and I had insurance with this car insurance company with this company since I was 18 years old. They canceled my policy. Because the Vermont insurance regulators are pretty tough, and a lot of companies just don't like doing business in a heavily regulated environment. But here's the thing. Bill McGuire made that money, and his company, United Healthcare, made that money because people did choose to buy their insurance. AARP is the principal front group for United Healthcare's insurance.
Yeah.
You have written that public-private competition, that if for-profit healthcare companies, health insurance companies like Bill McGuire's company, have to compete against Medicare. If we were to open up Medicare, which has a 3% overhead, if we were to open up Medicare and say anybody in the United States who wants to buy Medicare can simply buy Medicare, that would kill off the private insurance companies.
Well,
I don't see what's wrong with that.
Well, no, what I said was, is that if you had fair competition, if you had a pure defined contribution system where people would basically pick whatever it is that they wanted, I think that, you know, you could conceivably have fair competition. But I think what I said was, in talking about the concept of a public plan, is that if you have a public plan where all of the losses, all the liabilities, all the risk is assumed by the taxpayer on the one hand, and you have a private company that has to absorb its own risks, its own liabilities, and its profit and losses are strictly its own, that you have at the very, very, you know, from the get-go, you don't have a level playing field in competition. And my argument is that with an unlevel playing field, with the government both setting the rates and setting the rules, that you basically have something that is akin to an umpire setting the rules of the game and at the same time fielding a team. So, Tom, that was my view of it. But I mean,
no, I understand. But let's tranche this. You know, to use a fashionable word these days, let's break this up a little bit.
Right.
In a lot of companies that have national health care, Switzerland is probably the best example. I'm sure you're familiar with their program. Or Germany. I lived in Germany and used their program extensively, where you have basically a national single-payer health care system that covers all the basics. You want to go to see the doctor, you call, you can get in that afternoon. You have an emergency, boom, no problem. Any kind of real problem. And on top of that, if you want to have cosmetic surgery, if you want to have your hip replacement done this week instead of 6 months from now because it's not critical surgery, those kind of things, you can buy private insurance. In other words, there's an opening. The marketplace has created an opening for private health insurance companies to add to the national health insurance program.
Yeah,
but really,
no
private insurance company is able to compete with the national health care system because it runs at 2 or 3% overhead, and private corporations have to at least generate a dividend for their stockholders. What's wrong with that?
Well, my understanding, in Switzerland, it's basically all private plans competing, right?
Well, by and large.
There's
a large government subsidy for them, though.
There's a large government subsidy right now for private health insurance. It's almost as much as 50%.
Yeah, Medicare Part
premium.
D is a big chunk of it.
Right. I mean, so what I would do is I would just simply take the subsidies and distribute them, you know, according to need, and I would make them individually based, not just simply based on your employer where you happen to work.
But the difference is that many of the health insurance companies, particularly the most successful ones in Switzerland, are not-for-profit corporations. They're not having to distribute dividends to stockholders. They're not paying multimillion-dollar CEOs.
Tom, whether they're for profit or not for profit, you know, that should, I mean, if somebody wants to, you know, wants to enroll in a non-for-profit plan, that should be perfectly, you know, their choice. I'm for that. I don't want to talk past each other here.
Sure.
I'm not saying that, you know, for example, that, you know, you shouldn't have subsidies, in particular for low-income people, to buy health insurance. I'm, in fact, in favor of universal coverage. I'm not opposed to it. I'm also very much in favor of the idea of having very significant subsidies, which are income-based, so people can get into the health insurance market rather than being shutted off into Medicaid or the hospital emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let's not talk past each other here.
No, I agree. I remember, I'm old enough to remember the 50s and 60s and 70s in Michigan, where I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, where state law required all health insurance companies and all hospitals to be not-for-profit corporations.
Right.
And the first business that I owned, I gave health insurance to all my – we had 19 people working for us. And my recollection is it was $35 a month to Blue Cross Blue Shield for health insurance. This was like 1974. But it was cheap because the hospitals weren't making a profit. You know, they were owned by the county, or they were in the largest one was owned by the Catholic Church, but they weren't paying their CEOs huge salaries. They weren't distributing dividends, and the health insurance companies were not distributing dividends and not paying huge salaries. What's wrong with that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with people picking the plans that they want, including nonprofit plans.
How about including Medicare?
My only point is, though, Tom, my only point is that people should be able to pick plans where they get value for money, where they feel, in effect, that in the mutual exchange of dollars for goods, they are parting with their dollars because they believe they are getting value for what they get in return. That may, in fact, exclude McGuire. Okay.
Sure. No, I don't disagree. But, Bob, we only have a minute left. I want to get your thoughts on this.
No, it's vitally important.
What's wrong with having Medicare available to everybody in America as part of that collection of choices?
Well, let me put it this way. If you'd be in favor of having Medicare available to everybody, would it be on the basis of a purely defined contribution? And would Medicare be subject to the market rules just like everybody else, which means if the Medicare plan ran into started running losses, that they wouldn't be bailed out by the government?
No, their rates, they would have to operate at a break even, just like they did, like they always have.
Well, Medicare's got a $36 trillion unfunded liability right now. I mean, nobody would think, and you know,
well, that's if you project out in cash accounting, they don't have any liability at all.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, you could not run in the private sector a plan that would run up with those kinds of debts. But if you're talking about, you know, if you're talking about an absolutely simple, you know, principle of a level playing field across the board, we could do that in Medicare right now. I would like to see Medicare compete directly with private health plans in the current Medicare program.
Great. Bob Moffitt, Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. Thanks, Bob, for dropping by. 16 minutes.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Hey, it's Tom Hartman. Guys, I know how easy it is to get wrapped up in everyday life. You just flat out ignore your health. I hate to point out the obvious, but sometimes we need to be reminded that without our health, life as we know it becomes extremely difficult. Let me take a few seconds to talk about prostate health and how this small gland can lead to big problems if you ignore it. The classic signs of an unhealthy prostate include the following: difficulty urinating, frequent night bathroom trips, and even sexual dysfunction. Unfortunately, every man will have some sort of prostate-related health issue if he lives long enough. And we all should, right? You should visit your doctor for regular checkups and take Beta Prostate to support proper prostate function. Ignoring your prostate will not make your problems go away. Beta Prostate provides effective, all-natural support. Call and order Beta Prostate risk-free today. Dial 1-800-954-0803. Your satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Dial 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
Are you waking up with Carl Wolfson and friends?
These are less popular suggestions. Abraham Lincoln.
6 to 9.
The Obama's first dog. What name it could be?
Promise. Because he promised the girls and he promised us.
Elephant eater.
How about lipstick?
How about rogue?
You've got to have southpaw. I'd like to give it a local name and name it Mutt Safino, the weather dog.
It's Carl Wolfson.
As Abraham Lincoln said.
Morning 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
You may think Hollywood and history have told this story, but our moon has another side, a shadowland of dreams, politics, and human cost. Portland Center Stage presents the world premiere of Apollo by Nancy Keystone. Whatever you thought you knew about the space race or the theater, Apollo will open your eyes. Call 503-445-3700 or visit pcs.org.
At a time when Portland homeowners need it the most, mortgage rates have just taken an abrupt nosedive to a 50-year low. So if you've been patiently waiting for that perfect time to refinance, pull the trigger today and lock in rates as low as, are you ready? 5% flat with an APR of 5.25. I'm Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity, and this dream rate can vanish in the blink of an eye. So be decisive and grab the phone right now. We all know this financial crisis will end. And when it does, you'll be so glad you locked in that 5% rate with an APR of 5.25. Listen, when others can't help, Paramount Equity is still committed to saving our neighbors money with zero out-of-pocket expenses. So call 718-1000 today. And when you like it, lock it. 503-718-1000.
Paramount Equity, lending with expertise. Paramount Equity Mortgage.
License number ML3256.
TurboTax presents a message from Andrew Jackson.
To end up on the $20 bill, you know I must have been smart. So you'd be smart to listen when I say use TurboTax. See, TurboTax has a deduction maximizer that automatically looks through over 350 deductions, making it easy to get the maximum refund you're entitled to. Oh, and just between you and me, not only am I smart, but I'm very handsome.
TurboTax. Choose easy. Get started at TurboTax.com. Deduction maximizer included in Deluxe Premier and Home and Business.
My brother's roommate's friend sold it to me. A used SUV. They're safe, right? Right. Till the engine locks up in rush hour traffic. Turns out, the car was in a flood, and the Nimrod just dries it out and sells it to me. Without telling me. Who does that to someone else? They could have killed me.
Never buy a used car without Carfax. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report. Or go online. Who knows what it'll save you.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station. AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act, Teamster.org, their website. And a tip of the hat to the Teamsters, and thank you for their support. They also in favor of a national health care. Pretty much everybody's in favor of a national health care plan. And here's the problem that conservatives and corporatists are struggling with. Medicare operates at a 3%, it's actually a little less than 3% overhead, because the people who are administering Medicare, by and large, are civil servants. There's nobody running Medicare who's making a $100 million a year salary. There's no gold-plated faucets in the corporate jets of Medicare. In fact, there are no corporate jets. The headquarters building does not have a $4.5 million piece of art out in front of it. They don't publish fancy four-color brochures to pass out to an army of salespeople. They don't run ads on TV to advertise their product. They don't cut deals with people like AARP and have to share revenue with them in order to stay in business and use the credibility of AARP to sell their basically overpriced product to people. None of that is the case with Medicare. Medicare's single job is to make sure that people's health insurance, that people's health care is paid for and that their health needs are met. It's real simple. You know, John Edwards was on this program back before he melted down when he was running for president. He was on a couple of times, and one time he was talking about his health care program, which basically became Barack Obama's health care program, and he said, I think that, I'm paraphrasing here, but I think Mike Toth grabbed it, and it's in our archives on our website at tomhartman.com. You can listen to it for free. All our archives are free there, as is, by the way, our live chat room. You can drop by at tomhartman.com, and our Tom Vision, our free video web stream, which you can see over at airamerica.com or at tomhartman.com. In any case, he said, let's let all Americans buy into Medicare. You know, if the cost of private health insurance is $10,000 a year for the average family of four, and I think it's in that neighborhood. It might be even higher now than it was two or three years ago. But let's say it's $10,000. And those companies are having to generate 20, 25, 30, 35%. They're having to skim that amount of money off the top so that only 65 cents out of every dollar that comes in, or 55 cents out of every, you know, in some cases, actually goes to health care. And the rest of it is going to the army of telephone operators who are saying, no, we won't pay for that, to the army of people who are sending out notices to you saying, will you please confirm that you actually had this or else we won't pay it, hoping that you'll ignore that letter, thinking that it's junk mail, to the army of middle-level executives who are making $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year, to the small chunk of senior executives who are making millions a year, to the CEO who's making hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, to the stockholders to whom hundreds of millions of dollars in dividends have to be paid so that they will continue to buy and own the stock and make the whole scam possible. Medicare has none of that. Medicare simply says, oh, you were sick, you injured your foot, you got to pay for x-rays, you got to pay for the doctor, you got to pay for the splint, you got to pay for the crutches, here you go, we'll write the check. And so anyhow, Edwards said, I think any American should be able to buy into Medicare. Because my first question was, why not simply go to a national health care program, single-payer national health care program right now? And he was like, it's not going to be politically possible. He said, instead, everybody should be able to buy into Medicare. And I said, but if everybody can buy into Medicare, who would be crazy enough to buy into anything else? Because it's going to be cheaper. Instead of that $10,000 a year, it's going to be like $6,000 a year. Because you don't have all those overhead costs. And eventually, what's going to happen is nobody's going to be buying private for-profit health insurance, and it's going to put Medicare out of business. And he kind of chuckled, and he said, exactly. And so that's why what you are hearing is the nuancing of this stuff. Well, yeah, let's let people buy into Medicare, but let's means test it. Let's make sure they're poor enough so that there's only a small pool of people buying into Medicare, which is going to make it more difficult for Medicare. And there are also the people who tend to be sicker. The poor in the United States tend to be sicker than the wealthy for a whole variety of reasons, most having to do with lifestyle or availability of quality food. But nonetheless, that's the case. And so, let's means test it. Let's turn it into a welfare program. It's easier to kill off welfare. You know, there's all these subtle ways to try to prevent Medicare from turning into the single-payer, the national single-payer, universal single-payer healthcare system that it was envisioned as when Harry Truman first proposed it in 1947, and the Republicans in the House of Representatives and the Senate voted it down, and he couldn't get it through Congress. And Lyndon Johnson envisioned when he first put it forward in 1965 and finally passed it in either 66 or 67. I don't recall the year. And you know, they want to, like, you know, it's like the death by a thousand paper cuts. Well, yeah, it's a great idea, but I think it's just a great idea. And, you know, let for-profit companies compete. They'll all go out of business. Let some not-for-profit companies come in and compete. Many of them, particularly in the high end, I mean, there's always going to be, you know, rich folks who want special insurance. They'll do very well.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
God bless the folks in the chat room. I'll tell you. Sue Nethercutt says, oops, Tom misspoke. He said it would put Medicare out of business. And so I went into the chat room and I said, did I really say that? That competition would put Medicare out of business? And Tess says, yeah, you did, Tom, but we knew what you meant. Thank you. Yes, the point was that John Edwards was making and that I've been making all along is that if for-profit insurance companies are forced to compete with Medicare, Medicare will put them out of business. It will become larger. It is responsive to we the people. It, you know, you can't, you try and call the CEO of your health insurance company and get him on the phone. I dare you. Show up at their corporate headquarters and say, I have a right to talk to the CEO of this company or one of the senior executives. They will have you arrested. But you can go to Congress and you can talk to your member of Congress. You can call them. You may not speak with them on the phone, but you can certainly speak with somebody who will get a message to them, which will not happen with the larger health insurance companies, guaranteed. So it's a more responsive program. It's, you know, it's just broadly a better program. It's a better way to do it. It's the right way to do it. Hey, congratulations. Oddly enough, to Bernie Sanders. Gee, what a surprise. But I caught you doing something right. You know, I love catching people doing things right. So often in management and business, people think that their job is to catch people doing things wrong. I think an important thing to do is to catch people doing things right. And Bernie did it. And here's what Bernie did that was so right. George W. Bush, of course, you've seen this new portrait of him where he's sitting there giving us the middle finger with both hands. And seriously, you got to look at the portrait. He's actually sitting there and his middle finger is the conspicuous one, which I think is like his little parting joke to us. But nonetheless, under that portrait, it's got a caption And it says Bush's term was marked by the attacks on September 11, 2001 that led to wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. End of quote. Which we all know is a lie. So Bernie Sanders sends a letter to Martin Sullivan, the director of the National Portrait Gallery in Washington, and it says, and I quote, "When President Bush and Vice President Cheney misled our country into the war in Iraq, they certainly cited the attacks on September 11, along with equally specious claims that Iraq possessed vast arsenals of weapons of mass destruction. The notion, however, that 9/11 and Iraq are linked, or that one led to the other, has been widely and authoritatively debunked. Might I suggest that a reconsideration of the explanatory text next to the portrait of President Bush is in order?" Yes! Ah! And thanks to TPM Election Central for putting this right up at the top. There's links to where you can, you know, get activist about that if you want. Contact the National Gallery and let them know what you think. 866-303-2270 is our telephone number. And Jeremy in Miami, Florida. Hey, Jeremy, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Just great.
I just was listening to your conversation, and I heard the guy you were arguing with make the comparison of if we allowed the government to get too involved in healthcare, that would be like the umpire, because he would call the shots and he would make the rules. You remember what I was talking about?
Yeah.
And I just think that's the flaw of conservatives, that they look at it like it's a competition and like we're against government. And they tried to kill government, and they destroyed our economy. Wouldn't the people naturally make government to have the umpire? Wouldn't we want to be on the umpire's team?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Actually, to extend the metaphor, if there's an umpire, the umpire is Congress, because they're making the rules, and that umpire is directly responsive to us, and we're the consumers of the health care. And the team would be the Medicare, you know, the Department of Medicare or whatever they call that thing, you know, the Medicare administrators. But the umpires would be Congress. And so, yeah, well said, Jeremy. Thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate the call. Ann in Miami. Hey, Ann.
Hi. I loved your debate with that man. The funniest part, talking to people like that, they act as if our health care system is really good in this country. They don't realize we're behind Cuba. And we had an article in our paper recently that Cuba actually has the most amount of people over 100 than any other country in the Western Hemisphere.
Wow. Wow. Are you in the healthcare business, Ann?
Yeah, I'm a pharmacist. And the point I was trying to make is we don't really have any real free market in healthcare either. With this Medicare Part D, one of the things is United Healthcare that you had spoken about.
Right. It's William McGuire's company, the guy who made $1 billion.
Right. They take some of the Medicare Part Ds for big programs like AARP. And the thing is, they actually charge more for drugs than, say, another company might charge. But under Medicare Part D, pharmacists were gag ordered. We could only tell you about how to get it into Medicare Part D, but for instance, if your mother came in and she was paying $90 under, let's say, United Healthcare, but another healthcare provider, she would only have to pay $10 for that same drug. I'm not allowed to tell her that under Medicare Part D rules.
You mean you could get like fired or go to jail or something if you told a customer that their Medicare Part D insurance provider is ripping them off?
Right. We're not allowed to tell about the specific plans. I could only tell you I was supposed to promote you getting into Medicare Part D, but I was not allowed to tell you. And United is one of those companies that seem to be charging more for their medication than other companies.
Wow. Ann, thank you for that information.
Thank you.
And thanks for calling. Thanks for listening to us. I'm sorry, Ann. You were already gone there. And thanks for listening to us on WINS. Rudy in Norwich, New York, listening on Sirius. Hey, Rudy, what's up?
How you doing there, Tom?
I've
been listening to you for almost 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love Intelligent Thought. You should have run with Franken for Senate. I mean, what a concept of intelligence in D.C.
Well, Franken's going to handle that end of it, and I'll handle this end of it. Between the two of us, hopefully we can change America.
Now, I've got a couple of things I'm going to say real quick. My first one is why doesn't the government consider the groundswell of people who want the same $350 billion that they just gave away to be given to any and all taxpaying citizens with the their credit being forgiven, something that you had brought up a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Understanding that some people will blow the money, but at least most of that money would go back into the economy. You know, most other people would invest it.
Right. Yeah. The big argument is, you know, if we use that $350 billion to pay off mortgages, then some people who shouldn't have had a mortgage will be rewarded for having behaved badly. Well, the fact of the matter is, all of that money has gone to people who behaved badly now. So.
Well, they're also saying now that, you know, that they're not really sure where the heck the money went. You know, the banks
right.
have it.
That's my point. I mean, it has all gone to bad behavior. And,
right.
And, jeez, I mean, you know, so anyhow, you said you had another quick point, and then I got a whole bunch of calls here I got to get to.
I know, I'm just going to make them, they're all basically tied in. But the other part about the issue, I think it was Germany you quoted, said it, what they would do is free up the tax, not have the low income portion of the working poor pay any taxes into the system, which I think everyone should pay something into the tax.
Yeah, everyone does.
The third and final, do you know if any of our so-called officials listen to this program? And could you see to it that they do?
I mean, well, see, that's something Rudy, you're going to have to do, because if I call up a member of Congress and say, you know, you ought to listen to Tom Hartman program or read his books or read his blogs or something like that, they go, yeah, right. Who is this? Tom Hartman? Yeah, thanks a lot. but when they hear from you, and thank you, Rudy, for the call. I have had actually feedback from members of Congress who have heard from, in some cases, when we specifically call out somebody, for better or for worse, have gotten a pretty overwhelming response. And Bernie is continually telling me, you wouldn't believe I was in, fill in the blank of the city last week, and how many people came up and said, I listened to you on the Tom Hartman show. So I can tell you, there's one member of Congress who can recite my show chapter and verse, and that's Bernie Sanders. Ray in Houston, Texas. Hey, Ray, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing?
Just great. What's up?
We're talking about Medicare, joining
yeah.
Medicare.
Yeah,
that would be one of the single best stimuluses that this economy could have right there.
You're absolutely right.
Draining American pockets. I would gladly trade my $500 per person, whatever it is they're going to give us back, for that opportunity right there, because that would save me thousands. I have a family of four. We're paying right at $12,000 in premiums, plus we have a $5,000 deductible.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And Ray, not only would it provide, the bad news is your taxes would probably go up by $6,000, but you're no longer having to pay $12,000. Not only would it provide a stimulus in that there would be less money going out of the pockets of individuals, but it would also provide a stimulus in that corporations in America can compete with companies in Canada, and which provides national health care. And that's just a very, very vital thing. Stan in Petaluma. Hey, Stan, just a minute before the break here. Quick one. Stan? No, Stan. Okay. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back in just a second here on the Tom Hartman radio program. Our quote for the day, by the way, from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. This from the Nobel Lecture, December 11th, 1989. He said, responsibility does not only lie with the leaders of our countries or with those who have been appointed or elected to do a particular job. It lies with each of us individually. Peace, for example, starts within each one of us. When we have inner peace, we can be at peace with those around us. Sounds like a plan. Sounds like a great plan. Anyhow, we'll be right back. I know that there's a bunch of calls here, and we'll get right to you. There just was not quite enough time to do service to somebody before this hard break came. So 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Truth in Broadcasting. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You ever have one of those days where everything goes right? First, I get the best parking space at work. Tonight, I have a date with the very lovely Rachel. And today, I gave a killer presentation in Sydney, finalized a contract in London, and demoed our new product in Boston. Online, from my desk, with WebEx. WebEx lets me take meetings and give presentations from my desk. I just talk to clients on the phone, and they watch what's happening on my desktop from their desktop. So I can travel the world and still be here for my date tonight with Rachel.
Travel less, meet online. Go to WebEx.com and try WebEx free. Just click the radio graphic and enter promo code BLUE to get a free trial and a free webcam, too. Remember that code, BLUE, to qualify for the free webcam. WebEx, now part of Cisco, and used by more than 5.5 million people every month. Give it a try. Free. Go to WebEx.com and enter the promo code BLUE. WEBEX.com. Free webcams available while supplies last. Terms and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Ed Schultz.
We are the country of pink slips. No doubt. 467,000 more unemployed last week.
Noon to 3.
4.6 million drawing jobless claim benefits right now in America. It's like the Obama team is going to take over in 11 days, shouldering all these problems.
The Ed Schultz Show.
And the Republicans are trying to do a hell of a job of making all of us think that it's our fault.
Noon to 3.
They haven't changed a bit.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Online at 620kpoj.com.
Morning, gentlemen. Want to hear our specials?
Sure.
First, we have the seafood special. It's been sitting around here for a week. We're known around these parts for our food poisoning.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. It's called A1C, a simple blood test that can help measure your risk of complications such as heart attack. To find out more, go to www.diabetesa1c.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
If you need dental work, but you just can't bring yourself to go, Dr. Floyd Cash can relate. As a child, he had a bad experience at the dentist and didn't want to go back.
I was worried about going a whole week ahead of time. And I couldn't sleep the night before, and the more I went, the worse it got.
Dr. Cash runs Sleep Dentistry of Portland, dedicated to helping people who have trouble going to the dentist. From oral sedation to IV sedation, or even general anesthesia, Sleep Dentistry of Portland offers the dental work you need in a gentle, non-judgmental atmosphere.
That's what I've been doing since the first day I opened. I've tried to be the gentle dentist, mainly because I knew what had bothered me, so I was trying not to create that in anybody else.
Your introductory appointment is just a dollar, including full examination, any necessary x-rays, and consultation. Get the details at sleepdentistryofportland.com or call 503-405-7686. Sleep Dentistry of Portland.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Why spend more than you have to on your life insurance? Did you know that term life insurance rates have fallen over 60% in the last 10 years? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. At AccuQuote.com, we monitor the rates, features, and financial strength of hundreds of life insurance products. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can protect his family with $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $19 a month. Female rates are even lower. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life policies that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Why not find out how much you can save? Write down this number and call today for your free quote. Call 800-500-2171. One 5-minute call is all it takes. 800-500-2171. That's 800-500-2171.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
And if you want a doctor, I'll examine every inch of you.
Good. The new health care plan.
If you want a driver, climb inside. Or if you want to take me for a ride, you know you can. I'm your man. Are the moons too bright? The chains too tight?
I'm your man here, Tom Hartman, with you. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. That's our conservative alert for the day. Guess who? It's Joe the Plumber. He has decided to become a war correspondent and head off to Iraq, but he has some strange notions about war correspondenting.
I'll be honest with you, I don't think journalists should be anywhere allowed war. I mean, you guys report where our troops are at, you report what's happening day to day.
Wait a second. Journalists shouldn't be anywhere near a war. Oh, yeah, that's right, because he's going to do his war reporting about the Middle East from downtown Jerusalem, which is way far away from where the rockets are. And goodness gracious, war correspondents, they report on a war?
You make a big deal out of it? I think it's asinine. You know, I like back in World War One and World War Two when you'd go to the theater and you'd see your troops on you know, the screen, and everyone would be real excited and happy for them.
Wait a minute. During World War One and World War Two, you'd see your troops on the screen, and who took those pictures, Joe? I think it was war reporters.
Now everyone's got an opinion and wants to down our, and down soldiers, you know, our American soldiers or our Israeli soldiers. I think media should be abolished from, you know, reporting. You know, war is hell. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, look at this atrocity, well, you don't know the full story behind it half the time. So I think the media should have no business in it.
Yeah, so we never should have reported My Lai. We never should have reported Abu Ghraib. We really shouldn't know anything, and there shouldn't be war reporters. But Joe Wurzelbacher is going to go off, or Sam Wurzelbacher is going to go off and be one. I'm telling you, these guys are sad. So our conservative alert for the day, 866-303-2270, is our telephone number. And, excuse me, Frank in Los Angeles listening on K-Talk. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to say something about the healthcare industry.
Yes, sir.
And I've heard a lot of talk, happy talk, about nonprofits being utilized. However, the one comment I'd like to make is that nonprofits, just like for-profit institutions, base most, if not all, of their medical decisions on money value.
Right, modern-day nonprofits are.
Rather than human values, and because of that, there is an inherent conflict of interest, as far as I'm concerned, with taking care of humans rather than, you know, money, bank accounts.
Yeah.
Whether you're dealing with a drug company that is a for-profit and you're a non-profit institution, you've got to be concerned with your vendors at times.
Frank, I agree. I agree. It's a lesser ill, and I think that what was really highlighted by this was when Liddy Dole, Bob Dole's wife, was the head of the Red Cross and drew some incredibly huge salary. I think it was $500,000 a year. But you know, yeah, your point's well taken. And one more good strong argument for a single payer healthcare system. Carol in Phoenix. Hey, Carol.
Hi. You know, this is one of the probably top three important things that we need to be talking about, especially while Obama's in there and new. We need to push him toward this.
I agree. It's why we're doing the show on it.
Oh, and I'm so grateful. You know, one of the things that frustrates me about calling Medicare a single payer is that for almost everyone who has it, it is not. And that is because Medicare pays 80% of its allowable and capped charges. The remaining 20% is the individual's responsibility, or for most people, because they can't afford that 20%, because 20% of a lot of money is still a lot of money, they get a supplementary policy.
Right.
So if we would utilize Medicare as a single payer as it exists right now, we'd still have the profit insurance business involved in the supplementary aspect of it.
Right. We need to take it back to the way it was when LBJ first
laid
it out.
Exactly. And right now, Obama's very upset, and I don't blame him, with the health advantage plans. And that's where Medicare tells an HMO, here, you do the whole thing. And they give them a large amount of money, a lump sum, I think, every month, to manage that person's health care. The HMOs love that plan. So, you know, that tells me they must be getting a lot of money to be able to suppress the amount of care they give you.
Yeah, that's wrong. Yeah, in all probability, Carol. Well said. Thank you very much. Dan in San Diego. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out something that sort of goes largely unchallenged. And the proposal or proposed solutions often made that we can reduce health care costs just by, you know, with technology, computerizing records and reducing mistakes and so on.
Right.
And the flaw in that I see is the costs are not passed on to the consumer. It goes to the executives' pockets, you know, and so we end up still paying high costs, you know.
But sure.
I mean, that's the, you know, how did Bill McGuire make $1.7 billion? I'm sure he got his company much more efficient.
And it's just not healthcare either. Other industries, the same thing happens. You know, like the consumer gets screwed, and the executives just keep getting richer and richer.
Yeah, yeah. Well said. Thank you very much, Devron in Seattle. Hey, Devron. Devron.
Devron. Dalton's already got one for us.
I guess he did. Stan in Petaluma. Hey, Stan.
All right, we got cut off.
You're on the air, Stan.
Okay. I've got three very quick points to make. I've been working in this field here in California for the past 3 years, and we passed a single-payer health care bill twice. It got vetoed by the governor twice. Mm-hmm. The three points are as follows. First, there's a canard of freedom of choice. This freedom of choice concept is bandied about by the for-profit industry. The only time that you have freedom of choice is when you don't have insurance companies involved, where you can choose your own doctors, your own clinics, and with your own doctors and clinics make decisions.
And you got millions and millions of dollars in your checking account in case you're really sick.
That's right. So you don't have freedom of choice until you get rid of the insurance companies. Only single payer provides that. The second point is the distinction between for-profit health insurance and actual medical care delivery. There's no relationship between those two concepts.
Yeah, well, point well made. Stan, I'm sorry, it's the top of the hour. We're out of time here, and so your third point will have to wait for some future time. Coming up next, Carrie Lucas. Why does she think the tax cuts for the rich will help the economy now when they didn't before? My question for Carrie. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk radio for the sane among us, Carrie Lucas with the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org. Carrie, I think you're sane. Welcome to the show.
Oh, that's quite an intro and quite a compliment. Thank you so much.
You are, by the way, for our listeners who are not familiar with you, the Vice President of Policy and Economics at the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org. Carrie, why do you think that tax cuts for rich people will help the economy now? When we look over the last 100 years, all the way back to 1913, when we first got an income tax of any consequence, and every single time that rich people's taxes have gone up, the economy's gotten stronger over the long term and healthier, and every time they've been cut, it's been followed with a bubble and a crash.
So
every
Tom,
single
how do
time.
You make that? How do you make that claim? Looking at between the 70s and the 80s, with all the problems we had in the late 70s, and Ronald Reagan comes in and slashes top marginal tax rates, and it took a couple years, but we finally did start getting the economy going. And I think even most Democrats out there now realize that, and that's why President-elect Obama has recognized that raising tax rates on the rich right now would be a step in the wrong direction. Nobody proposes going back to tax levels like we had in the late 70s, because everybody recognizes that a soak the rich policy is also a soak the small business policy, and rich people buy things that the workers out there want to produce. So I don't know. We often get into this debate about the facts on history and what moves what when it comes to the economy. But we can debate what the proper or exact level of tax rates are for the rich, but I don't know. It just seems really outlandish to think that the way to get this economy moving is to go back to taxing the rich at 70%.
Well, okay, let's talk about Reagan for a minute. You know, Reagan cut the top marginal tax rate from 74% down to 27%, in two pieces, as I recall, 82 and 83. And it led to a bubble. you know, the stock market went crazy because all of a sudden rich people had a whole bunch more money and they were looking for ways to get the biggest return possible. They started putting money into the market. And then we had the crash of 87, Black Monday. It was the largest crash since Black, what was it, Tuesday in 1929, October 29th, 1929. We had the Reagan recession in 1983, which followed his first tax cut, which everybody is now comparing this recession to. We're saying this is the second worst since the Great Depression. Well, the first worst was during the Reagan years. And the growth of the economy during those 8 years of the Reagan years was small compared to the growth of the economy in the 1940s, the 1950s. Well, we can take the 40s out. I'll give you a World War II. We'll take the 40s out. It was small compared to the Eisenhower years, and he was a good Republican who believed in the 91% tax rate. It was small compared to the Nixon years. It was small compared to the Johnson years. It was small compared to the Carter years, actually. The economy was still growing, even though we had a problem with inflation because of the Vietnam War. So I would submit to you that if you actually look at the math, Carrie, you will find that every single time that we have cut taxes on the rich, we did it in 1921 when a Republican president came in, and it led to a bubble and then a crash 9 years later. And we did it and we moderately reduced taxes in 1964. Lyndon Johnson did, and that led to a reduction in economic activity over the next 5 or 6 years. And then when Reagan came along and dramatically cut taxes on the rich, it led to a bubble and a crash. And then Bush did it again, and we had another bubble and crash.
To look at the 80s and look at the 80s and then into the 90s and say, you know, President Clinton certainly never pushed tax rates back up on the rich to the extent he did a small bump up in tax rates, but nothing like going back to the Carter years. So if you look at from the time that they reduced taxes from Carter, there was a crash in 87, and I don't have my Dow Jones chart in front of me, but that was a pretty short-lived crash there, and we still had economic growth for a long time. And you know, we look at what's going on.
But
it wasn't
growing at the 3.1% average that we saw during the 50s, 60s, and 70s. It was down around 2.6, 2.7. I don't have the numbers in front of me either, but I guarantee you that the growth following these tax cuts has never been as high. The highest period of growth in the history of the United States was when the top marginal tax rate was 91%, and that's irrefutable.
Okay, Tom. We'll have to look at.
And again, we look at George Bush.
Why is it that nobody's been able to convince the guys on your side? Because certainly, I don't think you have anybody out there who is willing to talk about raising taxes on the rich. Because most people recognize that it's a matter of common sense that if you tax something, you're going to have less of it when it comes to productive work. And let's remember that a lot of the quote unquote rich people who file as top earners in the tax code are also small businesses, and small businesses have been generators of jobs. Small businesses in aggregate are actually more important to our economy than large businesses. More people are employed by small businesses than large businesses, and they would also be walloped by an increase in the income tax rate. So I'm really glad. One of the things that I would applaud President-elect Obama on is thus far he hasn't gone after this idea of hiking taxes on the rich, because all of it is his advisors recognize that this would be disastrous given in the current economy to try to take more money out of the hands of individuals in this way.
Well, here's you ask the question, you know, why are not the Democrats going along with this? And I think it's a really good and it's an important question. And I think the reason why they're not is because we have some very rich individuals, Joe Coors, you know, a billionaire, Richard Mellon Scaife, who I think helps fund your organization, and others who started the Heritage Foundation back in the late 70s, who started the Cato Institute, the Libertarian Think Tank, who started the American Enterprise Institute, and others. And these think tanks whose pretty, you know, explicit, at least in the early days, goal was to advance the interests of the very wealthy in the United States. And I'm not talking about small business owners. I'm talking about people who you know, get well over $3 to $30 million a year in income, that they have indoctrinated the American people since Reagan to believe somehow that if rich people don't pay as much taxes, that's somehow a social benefit and an economic benefit. And again, just think about the logic for this for a moment, Carrie. If somebody has hundreds of millions of dollars and suddenly they get an extra $100 million because of a big tax cut, as happened during the Bush tax cuts, for example,
What are they going to do with that money? Are they going to say, gee, I think I'm going to go out and hire 50 people because there's people out there who are out of work who need jobs? No. They're going to look for a place to get the highest return. So they put the money in hedge funds. They put the money they go to Bernie Madoff. They, you know, and the hedge funds are saying, hey, you know, we've got all this money flowing in. We've got to figure out, you know, a product to provide these people. So they start taking mortgages and slicing and dicing and tranching them and creating derivatives. And this is how you get these giant bubbles. It's how we had the bubble in the 20s. It's how we had the bubble in the 80s. You mentioned Clinton didn't raise taxes that much on the rich. I agree with you. And that's why we had a bubble in the 90s, the dot-com bubble. And we had a bubble in 2005. If we want to stop the bubble economies, we need to stop. We need to increase taxes on the very rich so that we can say, you know, you can earn your first $3.2 million. That's how much it was back in the 40s and 50s when you know adjust for inflation. You can first $3.2 million, you pay 20-30% income tax like everybody else does. After that, you're paying 90%. And you know who can't live on $3.2 million, Carrie?
Well, but Tom, you know, I think it's funny. Whenever you talk about this idea of what are the rich going to do with their money after they make $3 million, that they're just going to somehow do something really stupid and economically destructive with that next $1 million, and you wish that they would go and just spend it and you know buy a bunch of stuff and you know flush that stuff down the toilet so that it doesn't do anything and kept the economy growing, spend it on a bunch.
No, I'm not suggesting that, Carrie. What I'm saying is they shouldn't have it to begin with.
Okay, well, but I think that one of the problems we do need, it's worth asking, what happens when the rich have that extra $1 million? And I agree with you, you know, Bill Gates is not going to be able to, if he has an extra $1 million, he's sure not going to go out and, you know, buy more products at Walmart or Sears or whatever. He's got all the stuff he needs. That's not going to change his consumption levels. But I think that it's worth asking, you know, so you give this example that he's going to give it to Bernie Madoff. But what actually I think more often happens is, you know, putting this money in the bank, and then what does the bank do with it? Well, the bank goes out and gives people loans. The bank may give loans to
but they don't put it in the bank. They don't put investors. Rich people don't put money in savings accounts. They put them in investments, and that's what drives bubbles.
That's a wonderful thing. Of course, we want them to give money for investments and to businesses and to startups. And again, I think it's this real a strange kind of hostility to the idea of almost the idea of the entrepreneur. That's how people start businesses, is because they have some rich people who say, okay, I'm willing to give you $100,000 and let's see if we can make a go of it.
I'm sorry, Carrie. I've started a bunch of businesses and I've never gotten money from rich people to do it. And I'm not rich, and I wasn't when I started. You know, I started my first business on my unemployment check. And we ended up hiring 18 people. We had 18. Anyhow, we're out of time. Carrie Lucas, IWF.org. Check it out. Thank you, Carrie.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620, KPOJ.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
She's loud. She's proud. And she definitely draws a crowd.
We cannot let the American porn industry go down.
Randy Rhodes.
So why is the porn industry asking for a bailout? I know that I've given the porn industry at least $5 billion myself. So there's no need for the bailout, Larry.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
If you cannot make money by producing pornography in this country,
3 to 6,
you are pretty much freaking hopeless.
On AM 620 KPOJ
and 620KPOJ.com.
What happened to those long summer days? Sunsets are coming earlier and nights are getting cooler. More lights are turned on and more thermostats turned up. This fall and winter, Oregonians will experience energy cost increases, both at home and at the office. You can prepare now to use energy more wisely. At Energy Trust of Oregon, it's our mission to help you do just that. Energy Trust offers cash incentives as well as a wealth of information that will help you become more efficient with your energy use at home and at work. Log on to energytrust.org to find tips and solutions for lowering your energy costs. And these aren't just your average turn off some light suggestions. Energy Trust's cash incentives can help you when you install high-efficiency furnaces, heat pumps, water heaters, and insulation. It's a great time to make changes right now before the temperatures go down and the lights come on. Visit energytrust.org to learn more.
Prices are up. The cost of running your business is up. Everything's up, except your marketing budget. So what's a small business to do? Email marketing to your current customers with ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get professional-looking email newsletters that keep your customers coming back. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial with plans as low as $15 a month. So even if the economy's down, your sales don't have to be. Put your marketing on the upswing with ConstantContact.com.
Whether you run a small business or a big enterprise, you face similar IT challenges every day, including network security, user productivity, network and application performance, and data storage and email retrieval. That's why over 70,000 businesses like yours count on Barracuda Networks to solve these challenges
right out of the box without IT expertise at a price that any business can afford.
Call 888-ANTI-SPAM for a free 30-day trial of any of our security, productivity, or storage appliances.
That's 888-ANTI-SPAM.
Or see for yourself at Barracuda.com.
How much could you be saving on car insurance? $300, $400, $500? There's a real easy way to find out. Just go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the street, the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5. What a way.
Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you. Here's what George W. Bush had to say back about, five, 6 years ago.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs.
Okay, $550 billion is going to create 1 million new jobs. That's $550,000 in tax cuts for the wealthy for every job created. So, in other words, according to George Bush's math, if you give rich people $550,000, they will hire one working class person. Seriously, listen to this again. You can do the math if you got to calculate. You can just do it in your head. $550 billion, knock off three zeros, you got $550 million. A million jobs, knock off three zeros, you got 1,000 jobs, right? $550 million, knock off three zeros, you got $500,000. $1,000, knock off three zeros, you got one job. $500,000 or $550,000 per each job. Here we go.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs.
Yeah. And so today in his press conference, he's holding to it. I mean, this... He's holding to it.
I defended tax cuts when I campaigned. I helped implement tax cuts when I was president. And I will defend them after my presidency as the right course of action.
See, somehow conservatives in America, well, not somehow. You know, obviously, conservatives in America have been pushing for tax cuts for the rich from day one.
And then they throw, you know, a bone to the working people. You know, Reagan's tax cuts gave working people maybe a $200 a year tax break. Bush's gave, as I recall, $17 or $27 for the average person at the median income, $47,000 a year. So, you know, they'll throw a bone to the average person. They say, yeah, our tax cuts helped out the average guy. But really, it's hundreds of millions or billions of dollars for the very, very wealthy. And what does that do? What that does is it drives bubbles. You want to look at a time when our economy had no bubbles? Look at the time from 1913 to 1920 when the top marginal tax rate reached 80%. Or look at the time from 1935 until 1980 when the top marginal tax rate on people earning more than $3.2 million a year was 91%. There were no bubbles. Because people were not hysterically looking for places to throw money, and there were not people out there going, hey, I'll make something for you, not to worry. What we have gotten into with these bubbles, because there's so much money sloshing around in so few hands, and people trying to get as much as they can from it. Keep in mind, most hedge funds require you to have $2 million in liquid assets and $250,000 minimum investment. They are not for you and me. They are not for working people. They're not for people that you have to be super rich to even get into a hedge fund. You have to prove that you've got $2 million laying around and that you've got $250,000 minimum investment, that 100% of which you can prove you can lose. And that's where the bubbles came from, as 60 Minutes pointed out with the oil industry just over the weekend. Who's the biggest oil company in the United States? J.P. Morgan Stanley. Yeah. Driving this thing just right off the edge. 866-303-2270, our phone number, Paul in Venice Beach, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Tom. I'm a small business owner, and the GOP hates me. I pay $6,000 to $8,000 a month in taxes. I can't hide my money offshore. I'm competing against Walmart or Target or those places. And if I go bankrupt, they're going to take everything I own. If those guys go bankrupt, you're not allowed to touch their offshore money. We're bailing out AIG, who's an offshore company. They've been hiding their taxes for a decade. Why am I giving them my money if they're an offshore company?
Yeah. Well, you're giving them your money because you have a Republican administration that put together this program, and you got a bunch of cowardly Democrats who went along with it.
But, right.
You're absolutely right. The Republicans are not friends of small business. I say that as a small business person myself, and they never have been. The Republicans have always been the party of big business. Well said, Paul. Thank you very much. Let's see here. Anna in Greeley, California. Hey, Anna. We have just a minute before the break here at the bottom of the hour.
Colorado. I want to see
Colorado. I'm sorry.
I want to see the rich tax 99%, and they're all 10 of them, and they've all moved out of the country. And, of course, we pay all the taxes. Now, I was born in 1935. By 1980, I was advocating that the rich only be allowed to leave their children $50,000 each. That's it.
Wow.
Then let their children become workers. it's been obvious. Now, in the 60s, we had a service economy, remember, where women got a lot of jobs then because they would make more less.
Right.
And this allowed the corporations to move out to places where they really made less.
Yeah, and then along came what's his name, the chairman of GE, Jack Welch, and he discovered that there was people who spoke English in India who were willing to work for 25 cents an hour, and boom, all those jobs went out. Anna, well said. Thank you very much. You're a little more radical than I am, I'll tell you. 27 minutes, and God bless you for it. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman, right here with you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
It's the economy, stupid. It's the economy, stupid. Understand, I'm not a nostalgist.
I'm a most pragmatic man. I look at what naturally occurs in the living world, and I see diversity, not specialization. I look at hometown banks, restaurants, hardware stores where your name is your credit. And decisions are rendered by people who know you, where you are more than the five banks and the four airlines and the three newspaper chains and the two big boxes and the one and a half political parties and the one retort. It's the economy, stupid.
And when are we going to figure that out? 35 minutes past the hour, your radio support group for We the People, the Tom Hartman radio program. Well, yeah, in Nostaluga, Alabama, one of the residents, apparently, is a little nutty. See, the town has a post office, and the post office is a little town, and the post office had a cat. Now, speaking as somebody who has had dogs his entire life, up until about 4 years ago in Sabra, our last dog died at the old age of 18 or 19. And but it also has had cats all his life, and now I have this cat called Higgins, named Higgins, who is convinced I'm his mother or father or something. I don't know. I can't go anywhere in the house without Higgins following me. Anyway, speaking as a cat lover, this kind of astounds me. Here, a pet lover, let's say. This cat just kind of hung around the post office all day and slept, and one of the residents came in and said, actually sent a letter to the postmaster, said, "This is a federal building, and Sammy the cat doesn't pay taxes, and so he can't come in." And so the post office had to put a sign out in front banning the cat and kicked out the cat. So the town has rallied. Somebody has gotten a post office box in Sammy the cat's name. They're taking donations. And last Friday, postal officials did the right thing. They took down the sign banning Sammy the cat. However, they try to keep him outside most of the time. They're just, okay, come on, just let the cat in. 866-303-2270 is our telephone number. And, excuse me, let's see here. Dave in Granby, Massachusetts, listening on WHMP. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you.
When I was listening to your interview, I thought I heard the standard Republican argument for not taxing the rich, and that is, when they try to equate the rich with small business owners.
Right.
And the two are not the same.
My point. Yeah.
And one quick other thing, the notion of trying to use tax policy to spur employment is pretty ridiculous, as you know from being a small businessman.
Yeah, it's never been demonstrated to work. I mean, actually there was one program that sort of helped. There was back when we were running the Community for Abused Kids in 1978 to 1983, although it's still there, SalemChildren'sVillage.org, and it's a great charity if you're looking for one. But when I was the executive director of that program, the federal government funded a program, and I wish I could remember the acronym of it. It was a great program. And for 6 months, they would give you somebody who was unemployed for free, who would, and this was only available to nonprofit organizations, who would help out. And we had two different people that we hired through that program who came in basically as janitors, you know, the groundskeepers. One of them just built one of the most fabulous gardens for us that helped feed our kids. And we put a dock down on the lake for the kids to swim from and all this kind of stuff. And it cost us nothing. It was paid for with federal tax dollars. And it helped grow our nonprofit. It was a good, strong thing. And both of those people, as a consequence of having worked for us and done such a great job, ended up with jobs. In other words, they stayed with the organization. One of them stayed with us and one went to another organization, but he had a good work history. That was a great program. But that wasn't tax policy. That was the government saying, we're going to put people to work, we're going to pay the salary. Because these guys actually, this guy was making more money than I was. I was making 25 bucks a week. So, but I mean, he was making a decent salary. But he was getting it directly from the federal government via this, you know, via some kind of a block grant through the state. That was a good program. But again, that was not tax policy. You're absolutely right, Dave. Tax policy never does squat.
When Paul O'Neill was appointed to Bush's cabinet as Secretary of the Treasury, he was actually one of the good guys. He was probably Bush's best appointment.
And?
He made the comment that when he was president of Alcoa, he never made a hiring decision based on tax policy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, why would any company hire – thank you, Dave, for your comment. Why would any company pay $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year plus benefits plus, you know, everything else? Why would they do that in exchange for a $3,000 tax rebate? Unless that – the only reason – why any company, whether it's a small company or a big company, the only reason why any company hires anybody is because that person is going to earn that company more than they cost. That company, that person is going to help that company fulfill its mission in a way that is not going to hurt the company financially. That's the only reason. And it's got nothing to do with taxes. I mean, let's just understand this. Tim in Detroit, listen to WDTW. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Well, the way I look at it, in terms of marginal tax rates, I mean, I'd actually go back and even reverse the Reagan tax cuts.
Oh, that's my mantra. I have been saying for years, forget the Bush tax cuts. Roll back the Reagan tax cuts if you want to have a good, solid, stable, strong economy.
And what I would propose with that increase in marginal revenues, I would pop that back in, for example, to build a maglev train system. I mean, it works in most countries. It's very safe.
Yep.
You could hook it up in a lot of local towns, so people could get, let's say, from a local town in Michigan to a local town in Oregon. You could put a lot of that money back in education. We're sorely lacking in terms of competitiveness in education.
Let's go back to free college.
You know, you could make college free, community college free. You could... you know, you could have a lot of people get more competitive in terms of knowledge, in terms of science, math. You know, you could bring literature and the arts back into the states because we're sorely lacking in that. And one meme the conservatives always have is that the government does not work. But with a lot of the comments, only the government can actually build these things. Private interests do not have it in their interest to build these things. I mean, they're there to make profit.
Right. Plus, they don't have access to things like eminent domain, so they can't, you know, just take the land to build a maglev program. Absolutely right, and very well said, Tim. Thank you very much. David in Blaine, Washington. Hey, David.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having that last conversation you had with the guest. Just was really, really frustrating to listen to, because what came to my mind was this unbelievable greed and fraudulent activity that we've been seeing since the summertime, since Paulson was saying, oh, the sky was going to fall if we don't get this money, the $700 billion.
Right.
Now we've time traveled a few months into the future, and we see only half of it's been doled out, and there's no accountability. And this is the people's money. And when you were bringing up Reagan, when Reagan was trying to vilify government, you know, that was a piece of propaganda, because if people hear the word government, they should automatically think that it's the people.
Right.
People's money is what's funding everything.
Reagan exploded the size of government is what he did. He dramatically increased the size of government.
Exactly. And so now the United States economy and the global economy, for that matter, is going to hell in a handbasket fast.
Mm-hmm.
And these so-called rich people that have money coming out of every orifice in their body, coming up with every excuse to not be taxed and to keep all their money, and I'm not. This isn't taking away from people that have the ability to amass huge sums of money. But what is that? Where is that going? It's not working.
Yeah. This is my point. I have no problem with people making a lot of money. My point is that there is that history shows that, and you said it very well, David. Thank you. History shows that when you do not have a relatively high level of tax after the first $3 million in income. You know, let somebody make $3 million a year. $3 million a year is a hell of a lot of money. Let them make $3 million a year. After that, if you don't have a relatively high, at least a 70% level of taxation on that income, what you end up with is a bubble economy, because people start looking for ways to make money with their money, because that's what they have, is they have enormous amounts of money, and they're looking to make money with their money, and that is not productive. George in Lake Oswego, Oregon. Hey, George.
Hi. Thanks for taking me. You just said what I was going to say, because when 14% of the GNP of America is financial services, you know there's something wrong.
Right, and in the 1950s, it was under 6%.
Yeah. Right. And when people make money from money only, like hedge funds, primarily either wreck companies or gamble.
Yeah.
And so you have a really bad problem when you have so much cash kicking around.
Right. And it breeds things like these, like Cerebras, these companies that just buy companies to strip them
right.
down, or just, they're not interested in making cars, they're interested in making money. And I'd rather have a company that's interested in making cars and have it stand alone. We need to start enforcing our antitrust laws, and we need to make it, far more difficult for those kind of things to happen, as it used to be. I mean, this is, well said, George, this is the consequence of this insane deregulation that came out of the Reagan thinking that the Laffer curve, and it's laughable, the Laffer curve, the Phil Graham worldview, Phil and Wendy Graham worldview, and this libertarian notion that somehow we're all on our own. Greed is good. There is no greater good. There is no commons. There is no society. That it should be every man for himself and let the richest eat everybody else. Give me a break.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Remembering Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time.
Dr. King's dreams coming alive today.
Join us in celebrating on Air America and AirAmerica.com.
Hey, Tom Hartman here. The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a quality contractor. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a great plumber, painter, mechanic, heck, even a dentist? I'll tell you who to call. Call Angie's List. Angie's List is a growing collection of consumers' real-life service experiences. Use real reviews to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. Join today at AngiesList.com or call 1-888-888-LIST. That's AngiesList.com or 888-888-LIST.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party, and it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening, 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state.
Most of us don't like medical exams. So if you're a healthy person who's put off getting term life insurance, now hear this. Because you can get up to $500,000 in term life insurance with no doctor visit and no medical exam within minutes just by answering a few health questions over the phone. For a free quote, call eFinancial at 1-800-619-9011. Many people put off getting life insurance because they don't like medical exams. But it's possible to answer a few simple health questions and receive term life from top-rated carriers in minutes and for less than you'd imagine. Everyone's situation is different, but you could qualify for $500,000 of term life with no medical exam, and it's affordable. You could even be covered today. If you're living without term life, do what's right for your family in minutes, right over the phone. Call now for your free quote. Call 1-800-619-9011. 1-800-619-9011.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. One of the perks for KPOJ listeners is getting exclusive deals from our loyal advertisers. Here's one you can't afford to pass up. During January, Floor Trends Northwest is offering free basic installation on any carpet purchase over 50 yards. That's a savings of hundreds of dollars. They're also offering up to 50% off all overstock carpet and hardwood. Now is the time to take advantage of these huge discounts only for KPOJ listeners, only at Floor Trends Northwest in Selwood.
Hello, I'm John Hodgman, author of The Areas of My Expertise. Today I'm here to tell you about the unknown history of Powell's Books. The store was born during the written word revolution of 1895, fought beneath what is now the Willamette River. The bloody grammatical fuss claimed more than 250,000 lives, many of them fish. Then came the 1927 book massacre, when thousands of pulp novels suffered irrevocable dog ears and egregious coffee stains. But I see I'm out of time, support Powell's, an independent bookseller with a long, colorful history, and buy my book, The Areas of My Expertise. That is
all. Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. January is National Eye Care Month, a time when many of us use our new health insurance plans to get our eyes checked. Sadly, millions of people around the world don't have this luxury. This month, stop by Eyes on Broadway and donate your old glasses, which will be redistributed when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru this March to perform eye exams for those less fortunate. A great way to start out the new year. Donate your old glasses at 2300 Northeast Broadway or learn more at eyesonbroadway.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
It's the economy. The economy that looks for the maximum return, for the quick turnaround, for the short-term gain, for the unearned income, for the big lotto. It's the economy. Stupid. And the economy is impatient. It has a short attention span. It is easily bored. It is hungry. It is late for its next appointment. It puts you on hold. It does not return your calls. It's the economy. Stupid.
You know, I've been saying that it's not the best thing for Israel to be behaving the way they are in Gaza right now. As a supporter of both the rights of and the separate state for the Palestinians, but also as a supporter of Israel, that I'm very concerned about the way things are going. Let me say, in the context of the economy, I think that it's also, you know, as a supporter of the right of people to be rich in America, which I support, I'm not, you know, I'm not a Marxist or a communist. It is the best thing for rich people in America to live in a country and an economy where you don't have bubbles and crashes. And bubbles and crashes are created by these low levels of taxation. By the way, our tip of the hat to the day today to B-Roll, who left a comment on our blog at tomhartman.com saying the final press conference of President George W. Bush started a few minutes late this morning because journalists entering the White House press room were required to sign a pledge renouncing the practice of shoes first, ask questions later. Good on you, B-Roll. We're going to send you a copy of my book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. And by the way, a month or so ago, Bob Sheridan won one of these books, and I autographed it for him. It says to Rob Sheridan, tag your it, Tom Hartman. And we never mailed it to you. So, Rob, if you're out there and you're listening, send Sean an email with your or drop into the chat room or whatever. Let us know your postal address so we can get this book to you. And we will also get one to B-Roll. Thanks for the great comment on today's blog. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us, talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria, were you guys really required to sign a pledge renouncing the practice of throwing shoes at the president today?
It's a dirty lie.
Okay, I figured as much.
We're too well behaved.
You're too well. It just didn't even occur to them to have to do that. That's only the foreign press has to sign.
Only the foreign press. They know we wouldn't do it. Well, maybe they got Helen Thomas to do it. I don't know.
That's right, the Helen Thomas pledge. So, were you at the press conference today?
I was doing radio reports, so I was down in the basement. I was listening to it and speaking at the same time.
I see. Okay. So, how did it go? What happened? What are your thoughts? What's the takeaway from it?
Well, the takeaway is that it was mixed. That he was at the one point he was sentimental, and at another point he was combative. At the one point he was sort of factual, and at another point he was pugnacious. He was a number of different things. He called this an exit interview.
Right.
At one point, he defended himself. He was asked, of course, about mistakes, and he admitted that the mission accomplished banner was a mistake. But he also talked about Katrina, and he denied any problem with the federal response to the disaster. And he said, "Don't tell me the federal response was slow."
Yeah. In fact, here's the clip of this. Let me turn up the.
People said, "But the federal response was slow." Don't tell me the federal response was slow when there was 30,000 people pulled off roofs right after the storm passed.
Okay. You know, that's sort of like saying, don't tell me that we did a bad job of treating your cancer because when you showed up at the emergency room with that stubbed toe, we put a Band-Aid on it right away.
That was kind of how he came across at that point. He said he'd thought about it a great deal. He thought about whether he should have flown in on Air Force One, but then they would have had to have taken the police away from other things. You know, he's really thought about this. I think he really has thought about, to some extent, his image in the wake of Katrina. He was also asked about Gaza, whether the war in Gaza would be over by the time he leaves office. He said he hoped so. He talked about a sustainable ceasefire. He put a sustainable ceasefire firmly on the back of Hamas. Now, he did talk about whether he supported the Israeli assault in Gaza, and the one thing he did say that I thought was interesting, he said, obviously in these kinds of situations, I would hope Israel would continue to be mindful of innocent folks, and that they help, you know, expedite the delivery of humanitarian aid.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's for him, that's a good step, I think. But the larger point is, my sense of George W. Bush is that he was, you know, the privileged frat boy, private school, born with $1 million trust fund, never really had to work a day in his life, always, you know, screwed up every business he was involved with. When he ran for Congress in 77 on the platform of privatizing Social Security, he lost. And a very, very, very hypercritical mother. And I realize I'm wandering into the field of psychobabble here at my own risk, I suppose. But my sense of it is that this is a guy who has always had other people make excuses for him, other people cover for him, or has made excuses for himself that everybody around him has always accepted, perhaps arguably with the exception of his father, which has created some tension there. You know, I'm going back to Kitty Kelly's book, The Family, which is just an absolutely brilliant book that nobody knows about because of the media blackout. And my sense of it is that he's still making excuses, that he believes his own excuses, and he simply expects everybody else to, because all the sycophants around him do. And I'm wondering if when he was giving these excuses in the press room, there was a palpable skepticism, or whether the press is just kind of going to let him get a pass on this.
My sense, and I was zipping in and out of our booth and watching it, my sense was that there was healthy skepticism. I don't think that the press at this point gives him a pass. I think that they know him quite well. They know his weaknesses as well as his strengths.
Interesting.
That's my sense of it, yeah. Now, he was asked what he thought about Obama's promise to restore America's moral standing in the world, and he didn't like that at all. He said, I strongly disagree with the assessment that our moral standing has been damaged. It may be damaged amongst some of the elite.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right, yeah. It's the elite. We don't have to worry about them. I was shocked when he said that he was not going to ask for the $300 billion, which the Obama folks obviously want. I mean, they're planning on how to spend it. Because Obama hadn't come to him on bended knees and asked for it.
Well, you see, I think that what had happened there was that there hadn't been an official request yet, although there was an official request within an hour of the ending of that press conference, and now there has been a request for the money.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. Because it was almost like he was saying, you know, I'm not going to play ball unless they beg me or something. That was my sense of it. Maybe I'm just, you know, characterizing
this. I believe they're actually on the same page.
Interesting. Good. Victoria Jones, TalkRadioNews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So Obama says he's going to stimulate the economy. He's going to help put us back on track. And one of the things that I think, you know, is broadly known in economics going back 7,000 years to Gilgamesh and Sumeria is that the main thing that drives an economy is people buying things. And therefore, the people who are the primary drivers of the economy are the people who spend virtually all of their income, which is most working class people. And so if you want to stimulate the economy, you want to make sure that they have enough or maybe even a little more money than they have right now so that they can go out and buy more stuff. And one way to get that, it seems, at least history would seem to suggest, is by having them unionized. But there are some folks who suggest that that's not such a good idea, or that the ways that are being proposed to increase unionization, such as card check or the Employee Free Choice Act, ain't good. Mark Friedman is with us. He's the Director of Labor Policy for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, uschamber.com, the website. Mark, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Tom.
Mark, why are businesses and their shills so opposed to democracy in the workplace? I mean, unions are democratic institutions. What's wrong with that?
Well, I might take some issue with the description of unions as being democratic institutions, but let's focus on the
point. How are they not democratic?
They run out of an autocracy like many other institutions. They have a leadership that decides.
That is elected.
Members. But let's focus on your earlier point about the discussion of how employees might become unionized. And,
okay.
And that's really where I think our objections to the Employee Free Choice Act lie. We believe that the system that's in place respects both sides' interests, that it allows for both sides to have a debate over this issue, and that the idea of usurping that process for the benefit of one side only is really, well, in your phrase, undemocratic.
So you're suggesting that right now if I work in a non-union shop, and I walk up to another employee in that non-union shop and I say, you know, I think maybe we ought to have a union. I like the idea of having a union. Here's some literature on the union, that my employer can't fire me, because my understanding was that tens of thousands of people have been fired summarily for doing exactly what I just described.
Well, my understanding is that there are claims that there are citations filed, and those allegations are then played out in a legal process.
No, it is legal for employers to fire employees for you know, in particularly in so-called right-to-work states, for trying to form a union by and large, and yet that same employer can force.
I don't think that's accurate. That's
oh, okay.
Not
well, if it's not, I stand corrected. But nonetheless, the fact of the matter is, it happens.
And I
think you have to acknowledge that. And at the same time, that employer, I mean, you got
to. At the same time, I think you have to acknowledge that these things get played out in a legal process, and sometimes the employers are found to have violated the law, and sometimes not. And that this is a process that we have in place to protect both sides' interests.
The card check, really, this is the heart of the thing. You guys are claiming that card check is not a secret ballot. That's the essence of your argument.
Well, frankly, I don't think either side would disagree with that proposition.
I do.
That card check is a secret ballot?
That's right.
You would assert that card check is a secret ballot?
That's right, because when you sign that card, it is not available to the public. It is not available to your employer to see. It is only seen by the National Labor Relations Board. The employer can be asked to provide a copy of your signature so that they can compare it, but the employer does not see those things.
Well,
the union has the right to see them.
I'm not sure. I don't think I agree with that proposition either.
This is how the law is written. In fact, signature verification can be undertaken by a disinterested third party like a clergyman or a mediator. But even the employer or the union can't do that.
Okay. Well, let's go back to your comment about how that signature is gotten. The process for getting that signature is a wide open public process. The employee will be approached by union organizers, maybe fellow employees, but certainly union organizers in the mix, and they will be asked for a signature in front of other people.
Sure.
And in a lot of cases that we've heard about where this collection of signatures already occurs, because it does occur under the current system for other purposes, the people approaching employees for their signature are not shy about expressing their expectation that that employee will sign that card. They will do many things, some of them less savory than others, to get that signature. And that employee may very well say, I don't want to deal with this anymore. I just won't put up a fight. Here's my signature. And the organizers really
How is
don't
that,
care.
Mark, we're talking to Mark Friedman of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. How is that any different than the employer saying, if you guys unionized, I'm going to shut down this factory and move the jobs to Taiwan?
Well, first of all, the concept of how that signature is gotten and how that employee's support is gotten is vastly different. Vastly, 180 degrees different.
Oh, come on. The coercion involved in saying you're going to lose your job, you're going to lose your home, you're going to lose your health care, you're going to lose your way of life is 1,000 times worse than saying you're going to lose some peer pressure. Come on, give me a break, Mark. Plus, you know, Canada has right now unionization laws that are identical to the Employee Free Choice Act. In Canada, they have card check, and they've always had card check. We had card check in the United States from 1935 with the passage of the Wagner Act up until 1947 with Taft-Hartley. It worked just fine. There was nobody who was saying that they were being coerced. In Canada, I'm not hearing, you know, an explosion of people saying, I'm being coerced, oh my God, I'm being coerced. And they only have a 35% unionization rate. We had a 25% unionization rate in the United States before Reagan came into office. It's down to around 7% for private corporations now. You know, your doom and gloom scenario, I'm sorry, just historically has not played out in other countries that have this or when we had it before Taft-Hartley.
Are you done?
I am.
All right. Now, may I respond?
You certainly may.
In full sentences?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. Now, going back to my original point that how that employee's signature has gotten is signature here. It's the key point. Yep. In an election, that employee has an opportunity to choose one side or the other in a private matter. Now, they may agree with the employer's description, or they may agree with the union's description, but no one's going to know how they vote. Now, moving on to the Canada discussion, if you'll follow your Canada law, you'll notice that many of their provinces have now retreated from the position of mandating or recognition under a card check scheme that would be the same as the Employee Free Choice Act.
Well, no, but what they're doing is...
They're actually moving in the other direction.
What they're doing is they're allowing, and the Employee Free Choice Act, by the way, doesn't make it only card check. It also allows the current system, what we have right now.
We'll discuss that in a moment.
And they're adding that. Well, here's another argument for this.
That's a key point, Tom, and I want to make sure that people understand what this bill does and doesn't do. Because there's obviously been a lot of discussion about it, and I think in a lot of cases that discussion hasn't been a full airing of the discussion of the bill. The bill does not change the current law. I will give you that much. But here's the reality. If the bill is passed, and under the current language, it would require an employer to recognize the union if 51% of the employees are sign the cards.
Right.
Then the union organizers who control that process, and let's be clear here, the union organizers who control the process, not the employees organically. The union organizers will never go for an election, and they will never go into an employer with the mere 30% that they need to get the election. In fact, the reality is that unions understand right now they have to show up with at least 65 or 75% of the employees signing cards before they'll go for the election, because they know they're going to lose that many to
right, because
to
the employer is going to bring in union
really
busters.
This reduces the number of employees they have to get.
No,
from
it's
that
because
65 to 75% down to 51%.
Exactly, because they have to come in with an overwhelming majority, because they know as soon as the company knows that there's a union forming, all hell is going to break loose. They're going to bring in this $2 billion a year industry. They're going to bring in these professional union terrorizers, and they're going to force people to sit through slideshows and films and videos and scare the absolute hell out of them. And a lot of those people are going to say, okay, I give up. I don't want a union. Even though it's maybe the best thing for me. Mark, we've got to...
Maybe it's not the best thing for them. And the fact is...
Well, then they can always decertify the union.
The fact is, the card check scheme will only capture those employees who say they want the union or are too tired of being harassed to resist. It will not capture employees who do not want the union. And that's why it should never be confused for voting.
Well, I don't think it is voting. I think it's registration. And
you
I'd
just
like
call
to get,
it a secret ballot.
I'd like to get ballot. To that point. We've got to take a break, though. Can you stick around, Mark?
Yes, I'll stay here.
Okay, thank you. We're talking with Mark Friedman. He's the Director of Labor Policy for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Their website is uschamber.com, and you can read a whole lot of information over there about the whole breadth and depth of their perspective on this. And we're talking about the Employee Free Choice Act, which I guarantee you is going to be front and center. It's going to be probably the hottest thing that's going to happen once Barack Obama becomes president. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should too today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party. And it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
How much could you be saving on car insurance? $300, $400, $500? There's a real easy way to find out. Just go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at BeavertonLodge.com.
Not long ago, I was on I-5, or maybe it was 101, but it was head-to-toe in the granny lane, and I was hauling about 25 tons when a little old skate with a bright red wrapper tries to put the hammer down. He cuts me off, and he hits the brakes, and I nearly mow him down. Now, you ought to give Riggs one car length for every 10 miles per hour. We need braking room with 18 wheels and 600 pounds of power. If you cut us off or you ride a tail, you'll surely be pressing your luck. You see, Smokey is a friend of mine, and the ticket is $101. When I ride along, the man in blue calls ahead to Mama Bear. And that little Land Rover, he's now pulled over spending money like a millionaire. Now, $101 ain't no chicken feed, but in truth, it could be worse. It's a better price to pay than having to ride home in a hearse. So when you find yourself on the road with trucks, be sure to give us plenty of room, because extra patrols are going on now, and you might meet a bear real soon.
A message from the Washington Traffic Safety Commission, 10-4.
This morning, amidst growing tension between factions, the North Bank was unexpectedly besieged by kittens. We go live to the scene.
There were kittens everywhere. My daughter, she tried to run, but it was no use. They were too cute.
No group is officially claiming responsibility for the action, but the Prime Minister is wasting no time declaring peace on all neighboring nations.
We pledge to step up our country's production of scratching posts, the catnip, and the squeaking plastic mice.
Meanwhile, in the U.S., Republicans and Democrats unanimously passed the Fetch Act, making Texas the largest dog park in the world. You have been listening to Global News Hour.
Pets really do make the world a better place. Help us end petlessness. Visit the Oregon Humane Society at OregonHumane.org.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Well, that's sort of the idea, I guess. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Talk radio for the rest of us. With us is Mark Friedman. He is the Director of Labor Policy for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, uschamber.com, the website. Mark, I want to lay out another metaphor for you and see how far we can get with this one.
Is it possible to complete some of my thoughts on the previous segment?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, thank you. Let me just finish up the discussion about what happens under the card check scheme. And that is the organizers will present the cards to the employer, and if they've got to 51% and those signatures are verified, then the bill, as it's currently written, says that no election shall be held.
Is the election.
Well, that's not an election. That's a sign-up process, but it's not an election.
But it's immediately followed by an election for who's going to be the president of the union.
No, but it's not an election as to whether you have a union.
Right, you already have but you have 51% of the people who work there saying, yes, I want a union. How can you not call that an election?
That's not an election. That's a petition process, and it's not the same as giving employees the opportunity to vote without someone standing over their shoulder. And I want to be clear about how this bill works, because I've heard the unions say that this only gives employees the choice. It does not give them any choices. It gives the union organizers the control, and the union organizers are never going to go for an election.
Well, it gives the employees a union. So here's the question. Are you registered to vote?
Oh, yes.
And do you realize that your registration is public?
Maybe. I haven't checked on it.
It's in every state, I believe. It's the law. It's
all right. If you want to go find out that I'm registered, you can find out that I'm registered.
No, I'm not. I'm not trying to be combative here. I'm trying to make a point. I'm registered to vote as well. And when you and I registered to vote, we both decided that we wanted to be members of a participatory democratic republic, the United States of America. We wanted to be members of what is actually, I suppose, a bit of an elite, because we're a minority of American citizens as registered voters. We wanted to be part of the people who had some say in the process of this country. And, in fact, I'm registered as a Democrat. I'm guessing you're probably registered as an independent or Republican. And even that is a matter of public record. What's wrong with it being with registration being public when, as soon as that 51% have registered to say, yes, I'd like to have a union, they then hold all the votes subsequent to that, all the votes that are held after that union happens with 51% people have card check, just like you and I registered to vote here in the United States publicly, then we get to vote privately for who we want to have as president and vice president and everything else. And union members, 100% of the votes after the initial creation of the union of who's going to be the president, what the contract, whether they're going to vote for a contract or not, what the rules are and the bylaws of that union are going to be, all those things, those are all private secret ballots. What's wrong with that?
Well, let me just start to break down your analogy. I would suggest that the act of registering the vote is the equivalent of being an employee in a population, in a bargaining unit, if you will, that is subject to organizing, and that the action of voting, as you and I do, in a private polling place where no one is telling us how to do it, no one is watching us do it, is what is necessary and what we have under the current secret ballot system. Now, I mean, let me ask you this. What broad policy measure or issue, or in the context of elections, as we were just talking about, a tax levy, let's say, has ever been debated in a vacuum, with only one side having the opportunity to make their case without the other side making a responding case?
Well, there's nothing in this law that prevents a corporation from saying, please don't unionize, or if you do, here's what might
happen.
Well,
in fact, that's what would happen, because the whole notion of a card check organizing scheme is to be done outside of the employer's knowledge. It's all about staying a stealth organization and not giving the employer the opportunity to make their points.
But don't you think, though, that this what we're going to go to is what Canada has and what we had in the United States before Taft-Hartley in 1947. Don't you think that the companies are going to be right from the get-go saying, you know, here's why we're opposed to unions?
They are right now. Well, companies should have the opportunity to express what they think is their interest.
But they do have that.
Well, but they
in fact,
won't
they have that far more than employees
card
do.
Check, in a card check organizing scheme, the first time a company may hear about it is when they're presented with the cards, and it's a done deal. That's
right.
Not a fair debate. That's not a matter of giving both.
Well, it simply means that every company in America knows now that we have this law. Hey, you might get unionized, and so if they want to be, you know, proactive in saying please don't unionize here, they, you know, they're welcome to do that.
I don't think that's a fair debate. I don't think that really sets up the issues at stake. There's no opportunity for an employer under a card check organizing scheme to respond to the misstatements or the characterizations that are being made of them by a union who's coming after their employees.
Well, once they have the union, they can certainly do that. There can always be a vote to decertify the union.
Oh, that's a cavalier attitude. So,
well, no, it happens. I mean, it happened right here at the radio station.
Once the union comes in and messes it up, then the employees have the chance to get out of it. That's not it. That's not even a reasonable possibility, because then the unions will.
Okay, Mark, we're out of time, but you know, great discussion. Thank you so much. USChamber.com, Mark Friedman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Fighting mind numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program. Well, you've heard the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's side of this, and I guarantee you they and their corporate buddies are going to be throwing hundreds of millions of dollars, perhaps billions of dollars, into trying to defeat the Employee Free Choice Act, what they refer to as card check. John Youngdahl is with us. He is with the SEIU. He is the national political director, in fact, the leader of the Change the Works campaign, SEIU.org, of course, the website. And, John, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. It's really good to be on today.
So, I went through about every argument that I had from, you know, card check is what we had in the United States before Taft-Hartley in 47. Card check is what they have in Canada, and it works quite well, thank you very much. And we're not hearing all kinds of, you know, people aren't screaming, running out of Canada going, oh, my God, the union bosses are intimidating me. They have a 35% unionization rate there, which is not, you know, the 50 or 80 or 90% that seems to so terrorize the American business community. I laid out the argument that, for that matter, registering to vote, which is a public thing, your voter registration is public, your party affiliation is public information, is not that different from registering to have a union. And once you've registered to have the union, once you've signed the card, then all the elections for the who's going to be the president, what are the bylaws going to be, what contract are you going to vote, all that stuff is secret ballot. That the whole secret ballot thing is a canard, is an attempt to change the conversation. And, you know, obviously, and of course, he did a good job for his, you know, defending his side. He didn't give on any of it. But what did I miss anything? Or is, you know, how is SEIU, how is organized labor going to deal with the absolute onslaught that is going to be hitting the airwaves in the next month or two as this becomes a major issue?
No, I think you hit all the major points. I mean, the chamber likes to refer to this as a card check bill when it actually is employee free choice. And that's really what this is all about, is giving workers the right to decide whether or not they want to have a voice in the workplace. It doesn't force anything on anyone. And really, that's what they fear, is that we start to use the correct terms. And they're trying to paint this as a bill that will take away the secret ballot when we've had the secret ballot. The problem is, in 1974, the rules changed, and it gave the employers the right to basically turned down workers who wanted to use the card check. We called it a majority sign-up as an option.
Mm-hmm. In 74 or in 47?
Yeah, 1974 is when the final court case came down.
Oh, I thought it was Taft-Hartley in 47. I'm sorry. Give me the details.
Well, that weakened labor laws generally, but 74 was the court decisions that basically gave the employer the choice, not the employee the choice on whether or not they wanted to use majority sign-up or not.
Hmm.
You know, we currently use majority sign-up with employers that want to make sure that workers have a voice in the workplace, and it's been successful building good relationships between employers and employees when they are willing to do it, you know, on their own choice.
Isn't UPS doing this? Isn't UPS allowing card check to go forward?
Yeah, UPS, we've had Kaiser Permanente has also, you know, offered this to their employees as a way of signing up if the employees want to join a union. So there's a lot of major employers who have done this. You know, what the chamber fears is that, you know, this will give the employees, you know, the ability to choose, and that's what they want to try to take away.
Right. Interesting. So back to the question, how are you guys going to deal with this onslaught, what is going to be? I mean, we all remember, many of us remember the advertising campaign that followed Hillary Clinton's attempt to moderately change our national health care program, the old Harry and Louise ads. I think we ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It started to come out in a lot of the U.S. Senate races where they played a lot of negative ads about the Employee Free Choice Act. To their concern, none of those resonated with the public, and in all the cases that were competitive, the ads did not work. We were able to elect the senators who support this Employee Free Choice Act. So, you know, their strategy so far hasn't worked. I assume that we'll see a lot more advertising in the future. We know that we're not going to be able to compete on TV and even on radio in terms of the dollar amount. So what we're doing is we're moving some of our best members and some of our best staff into the field to begin to talk to the public one-on-one through community meetings, through town hall forums, to get the public engaged in this. You know, giving workers the ability to form unions is the best opportunity workers have in this country to restore the middle class. Without that, we're going to continue to see the excesses of CEO pay. We're going to continue to see workers fall further and further behind. For example, in the last 7 years, the median household income has actually dropped $2,000 after you factor in inflation. That just shows that the middle class is hurting in our country. And so we need to reach out to the public to gain their support. And polling, fortunately, has shown that the public does support this.
Indeed. We're talking with John Youngdahl of the SEIU, and he is the national political director and the leader of the Change That Works campaign. John, the headline of the last news release I got from you, SEIU unveils major national campaign to bring economic solutions to Main Street. Beyond the Employee Free Choice Act, what are the things that you are that SEIU is advocating?
Well, the other two parts of our Change the Works campaign are the economic recovery plan. You know, we saw that Congress did a good job of helping out Wall Street, really did very little for Main Street. And right now we need to look at the fact that, you know, credit card debt is nearly $1 trillion nationally. We've seen 1 million homes foreclosed. 46 million Americans are without insurance. You know, 72 million additional Americans are struggling with medical debt. You know, we need to really change, you know, how our country operates and really begin to look at ways that we can really kind of rebuild the middle class in this country. And that's what the Change the Works campaign is all about. So we're going to look at the economic recovery to make sure that it's actually helping Main Street instead of Wall Street. The other thing that we're looking at is working on comprehensive health care reform. You know, it's a tragedy that, you know, 46 million Americans are without health insurance, including children. And it should never be in the wealthiest country in the world, and we want to make sure that that doesn't continue. We also need to obviously make sure that those people who have insurance to make that more affordable, because right now even people with insurance are finding that they can't use it because out-of-pocket costs are so high. So we feel that there's an opportunity with the new Obama administration, with Congress that got elected on change, that, you know, this year there's enormous opportunity to try to change the way our country operates.
Right. Okay. Well done. Mark, thank you so much. Or John, I'm sorry. John Youngdahl.
That's okay.
John, thank you so much. You're doing great work. SEIU.org, of course, is the website. Let me encourage people to get over there and participate and keep it up, eh?
Okay. Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Thanks for dropping by. John Youngdahl with the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, SEIU.org. Check it out. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Andy in Pinyon Hills, California, listening on KHIZ. Hey, Andy. Andy, what's up?
Oh, I was just calling in because I was just so frustrated with Mr. Friedman's portrayal of so many things, the card check scheme, instead of calling it the Employee Free Choice Act, which you've pointed out already.
Right.
And that outside organizers are going to come in and just put a gun to your head and force you to sign these cards. There are no outside organizers. I'm an employee of my company, have been for 32 years. 10 years ago, they decided to just completely take away half my retirement. Because we don't have a union, we don't have a contract, they can just do that. They can just randomly say, we're changing the way we figure your retirement, and it's going to be half what you thought it was going to be for the last 23 years.
Right.
So I became an organizer for the Communication Workers of America and have been for the last 8 years. And I can tell you there are no outside organizers. The CWA provides us a scaffold, a process for building our union, but there are no outside people. Everybody in IBM who's trying to organize the union are employees.
And so, it's almost like there's some projection going on because these companies hire outside experts to come in and scare their employees.
Yes, they do. And he was trying to say, oh, the employers don't use processes like firing employees or threatening to move plants. I can tell you for sure my employer has moved plants and has retaliated against me personally, although I'm still working here. They've retaliated by taking away bonuses and things like that to my coworkers to try and intimidate me into stopping what I'm doing.
Remarkable. Andy, thanks a lot for the call and for the heads up. I appreciate it. And thanks for listening to the show. Jim in Vancouver, British Columbia. Hey, Jim.
Hi. I'd just like to throw a bit of a broad perspective on this. I've been a non-union construction worker, union construction worker, union organizer. And my last job was general manager of a company that employed 1,600 construction workers. And I think your whole argument in this space, for the simple reason that it's the employee's choice as to whether to have a union or not. It's
in
the
Canada.
Employers want to be fined in it.
Right.
Employers have no business having anything to say about it because any more than they, than the workers have a business coming into the boardroom and telling the company which lawyers they can hire and which ones they can't.
Well, that's an excellent point.
As an organizer, I can tell you that from years of experience, the whole point of getting a vote is to give the company 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever they can delay it to terrorize the hell out of the workers. That's it. It happened.
Right. Well said. Jim, thank you very much for that. And thanks for listening to us and calling from Canada there. That is so right. That is so right. You know, the employee does not have the right to go into the boardroom and say, okay, here's how we're going to run this company. So why should the employer have the right to say to the employee, you can or can't have a union? Brilliant. 46 minutes past the hour.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Are you waking up with Carl Wolfson and friends?
These are less popular suggestions. Abraham Lincoln.
6 to 9.
The Obama's first dog. What name it could be?
Promise. Because he promised the girls and he promised us.
Elephant eater.
How about lipstick?
How about rogue?
You've got to have southpaw. I'd like to give it a local name and name it Mutt Safino, the weather dog.
It's Carl Wolfson.
As Abraham Lincoln said.
Morning 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
At a time when Portland homeowners need it the most, mortgage rates have just taken an abrupt nosedive to a 50-year low. So if you've been patiently waiting for that perfect time to refinance, pull the trigger today and lock in rates as low as, are you ready? 5% flat with an APR of 5.25. I'm Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity, and this dream rate can vanish in the blink of an eye. So be decisive and grab the phone right now. We all know this financial crisis will end. And when it does, you'll be so glad you locked in that 5% rate with an APR of 5.25. Listen, when others can't help, Paramount Equity is still committed to saving our neighbors money with zero out-of-pocket expenses. So call 718-1000 today. And when you like it, lock it. 503-718-1000.
Paramount Equity, lending with expertise. Paramount Equity Mortgage.
License number ML3256.
Reason number 9 to switch to GEICO. There's nothing sweeter than saving money on car insurance. It's one of those rare opportunities in life where you can thumb your nose at the system and say, okay, system, listen up. I just got a better deal with GEICO. Great savings, personal service 24/7, and the latest in online technology. Of course, the system may sulk for a day or two, but you're going to feel a lot better.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com. Then buy online, over the phone, or at your local office. Reason number 48 to switch to GEICO.
As much as you enjoy the experience, you won't have to go to the post office. We can automatically debit your checking account or even charge a premium to your credit card. It's easy and you never have to worry about mailing your car insurance premium again. But we must warn you, you won't get to use any postage stamps. I hear they're coming out with some pretty cool designs.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online, over the phone, or at your local office.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. One of the perks for KPOJ listeners is getting exclusive deals from our loyal advertisers. Here's one you can't afford to pass up. During January, Floor Trends Northwest is offering free basic installation on any carpet purchase over 50 yards. That's a savings of hundreds of dollars. They're also offering up to 50% off all overstock carpet and hardwood. Now is the time to take advantage of these huge discounts only for KPOJ listeners, only at Floor Trends Northwest in Selwood.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
But it's about economy. It's about economy. It's about small towns with banks and baseball teams, a general store, churches. It's about economy. Family cemeteries, a schoolhouse, a lumberyard, a radio station, a newspaper, a roadhouse. It's about economy. A funeral home, a filling station, open space, open opportunities, open eyes, open hearts. It's about economy.
Ultimately, it's always about the economy. Everything comes down to money. And people talk about political power. Even that comes down to money. Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Just a quick heads up. Next week, I'll be in Washington, D.C. for the Radio Row, the Washington, D.C. Inaugural Radio Row, put together by the Talk Radio News Service, in fact. On the 19th, on Monday night, from 10 p.m. to midnight, I will be along with Medea Benjamin, Jody Evans, John Nichols, Donna Smith, and Congressman Jim McGovern, Tom Hayden, a bunch of great people who are, I believe all of us are on the advisory board of Progressive Democrats of America. We are having a Martin Luther King Day pre-inaugural tribute. That's at 10 p.m. at Busboys and Poets in the Langston Hughes Room. And you need to sign up for that. Go over to PD to get tickets. Go to PD America, as in Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org for that. And that's Monday of next week, a week from tonight.
And then on March the 7th, on that Saturday, Seattle, Washington, the one-day cruise with me and folks from KPTK AM 1090 from noon to 3 aboard the Royal Argosy. Tickets for that are $49. It includes a three-hour cruise of Elliott Bay and the Puget Sound, brunch and non-alcoholic beverages, and prize giveaways on board. You can sign up for that at am1090seattle.com. March 19th in Chicago, I'll be debating Michael Medved, sponsored by WCPT, AM Progressive Talk, AM and FM in Chicago. And on May 1st and 2nd, Friday and Saturday, I'll be in Denver, Colorado, keynoting the Green Festival there. So just a quick update on what is coming up. 866-303-2270 is our telephone number. Tim in West Seattle. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was glad to call in support of unions. I have a couple of quick anecdotes that I think show the need for that kind of empowerment of individual employees. I've worked at a few different places where I thought there was bad treatment given to employees that wouldn't have been possible if there'd been some kind of a layer of protection. Something like unions, or really the only thing would be unions, and I can't think of a substitute, that would empower them to say, no, you can't do this for no reason. Places like, one place I worked, the Pacific Science Center here in Seattle, there was a proactive movement towards unionization.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, quite conveniently, they had a pseudo-budget crunch, and as it just happened to be, our whole department was targeted. Everyone in support of the union was fired, and to make it look good, they got rid of a few middle management people who were then quietly brought back a few months later and put into other departments.
Wow.
And that's just the sort of thing that happens when you don't have that kind of protection.
Right.
Similar mistreatment over, you know, just having ideas or the least bit of independence or self-will at other places I worked, such as MDI, Mason-Dixon Intermodal, and Seattle Nuclear Medicine most recently.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you're cowed into submission and not really allowed to have very much of what we would call self-will or free thought when you work at such places, which just seem more and more bold, especially in the Bush economy.
Yeah. Tim, let's just be and thank you for the call. Well said. Let's just be clear about it. The workplace is a kingdom. It is not a democracy. You don't have rights in the workplace. You know, the Supreme Court has ruled that a corporation has the Fourth Amendment right of privacy, the First Amendment right of free speech, the 14th Amendment right against discrimination. But you and I, when we walk into our place of work, our employer can say, if you say this, if you speak out, for example, you know, against our practice doing XYZ, you're fired. You have no free speech rights in a place of business. You give up your First Amendment rights when you walk in the door. You give up your Fourth Amendment rights when you walk in that door. They say, hey, you're on private property. We can watch your keystrokes. We can monitor your telephone conversations. We can put a camera and monitor you and all your activities. We can even ask for bodily fluids. We can ask for things from inside your body, and we can examine them any way we damn well please, and we can make decisions about your future. Literally life and death decisions, given that for many people, particularly people with pre-existing conditions, health insurance, by and large, only comes with a job. The company's saying, we can make those decisions for you. You can't. So companies, corporations, organizations that hire people are, by and large, kingdoms. Unions are democracies. Unions are elected. Unions come into being because the majority of the people say they want it, just like the United States came into being. Unions are the leadership of a union 100% of the time is elected. The rules by which the union operates are voted on by the members. The members can change those rules. The members can get rid of those rules. So, you know, let's just be clear about what's really going on here. John in Los Angeles. Hey, John, got about a minute before we got to wrap up this hour. What's up?
Okay, I'll make it quick. Good to hear from you. love your program. Let's see. I'm a member of Local 721 here in Los Angeles, and we just had an episode where more or less the union was railroading us and trying to change our bylaws. See, 347 merged together with several unions. It became 721, Rural SEIU. And there were only five people left on this advisory committee that were putting together the bylaws. And out of, I think it was like 16 or 21 people. So, you know, we raised a big stink about it, and more or less, they pretty much fought us tooth and nail up until just recently where we had to get Andy Stearns involved, and finally they opened it up to us. So I'll tell you, yeah. The unions are a machine all by themselves, and they're a hungry machine. I mean, you know, they make money, and when I look at my union,
well, you know, they're making there are not stockholders for unions, John. There are members, and I would submit to you that A, great that you finally got what you wanted. B, you know, it's a shame they got that far. But here's the bottom line: if you were talking about your employer, you'd simply be out on the street. I mean, they would have just thrown your butt out. The union is at least working this stuff out because, as I said, unions are democratic institutions. So, anyhow, coming up tomorrow, we're going to have an interesting day. Dan Gaynor, the Business Media Institute, is going to say the media is behind our economic crisis. That should be interesting. And Larry Beinhart, author of Wag the Dog, is going to join us to talk about let's tax the rich. I find this a Larry's done some fascinating research. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.